DW Africa Link.
In Malawi, surviving gender-based violence is often just the beginning of another harrowing journey, one marked by silence, stigma, and systemic failure. Despite laws designed to protect them, many women and girls find themselves navigating a justice system that offers little support. Shelters are scarce, prosecutions are weak, and justice, when it arrives, is slow. In this episode, we urgently ask, why is the system failing survivors and what is being done to fix it? Your attention to this matter is crucial. Stay with us. Hello and welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from across the continent. My name is Josephine Mahachi.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
A new report by the Center for Human Rights Education, Advice and Assistance has revealed a disturbing trend. In Malawi, survivors of gender-based violence are often punished instead of protected. The report exposes deep flaws in the criminal justice system, particularly for women in custody. Many are charged after defending themselves from abuse, and even when injured, they are denied medical care. Gender-based violence remains a pervasive issue in Malawi, affecting women and girls across all regions and social backgrounds. So what's going wrong and what can be done to change the narrative? Joining me to unpack this are Victor Mango, Executive Director of the Center for Human Rights, Education Advice and Assistance, and DW's Chimwemwe Padatha in Lilongwe. Chimwemwe, I'll start with you to just talk about the report itself and also in the reportings that you have been doing for the past few years. This is not the first time we are talking about this, this topic. It seems like it's not ending, right?
Yes, that is true, Josie. Thanks so much. I would say the increasing cases of gender-based violence is what prompted this research here in Malawi. What I can broadly say is that gender-based violence remains a serious problem. It is on record that the majority of women and girls experience physical, sexual, and emotional violence. I'll also make reference to recent findings of a research by an organization called the Center for Human Rights Education Advice and Assistance, Claire in short, who's the director, is also part of this discussion. The past week, a report titled The Survivor Behind the Accused was made public, revealing how survivors of gender-based violence are being punished instead of being protected. The report exposed failures by the criminal justice system, particularly women who are in custody. It also revealed that the most type of abuse for women is physical abuse, with incidents of prolonged detention of women in the custody being on the rise. But sadly, these women do not receive adequate access to psychological services. That's according to findings of this report. And apart from that, the report also exposed that it calls for systemic rights violations, including pre-trial detention and gender discrimination. So that's what I can say briefly about this report that has just been released, The Survivor Behind the Accused.
Right. Now to you, Victor Mango, you are the executive director. Obviously, this report is from your organization. If you can just tell us more about the findings, what are the major causes of gender-based violence, what you've really discovered, and the inspiration behind this whole report.
Yeah, so in the report, we interviewed 63 women detained in most of the Malawi facility prisons, who were on the serious violent offences. And the report unearthed a number of issues. We actually discovered that the women who are supposed to be protected, they are the ones who are victimised and who are in custody because of the maybe inconsiderate by the criminal justice system, or maybe lack of awareness by the women, and also our criminal justice system is not responsive for the issues regarding gender. So normally what happens is that we discover that there could be there were a number of women who were facing gender-based violence from their husbands. Well, sometimes it was the thing that took maybe some time, and then the end result, maybe a woman wants to react, and then certainly we find that that woman has fallen into trap of the criminal justice system because of her reaction. So we have noted that I think there are a number of female. I've said that we interviewed 63 prisoners, and all these 63 prisoners who were in custody, they had no lawyer. They were representing themselves, so it was so difficult for them maybe to follow the criminal justice system and also to tell the magistrates exactly what happened, what necessitated that.
Right, right. Now, Victor, from what I've just discovered now, it looks like obviously some of these women are failed by the government, or rather the justice system. We're not talking about the women, obviously the husbands have died or whatever, because that always has to go to trial and see if they're guilty or not. But why has the government really failed to protect survivors of gender-based violence? Is it a lack of lawyers, or what exactly could be the problem?
Yeah, I think in Malawi, we have the legal aid department, which is a department that assists the vulnerable groups in terms of access to justice, in terms of having lawyers. But as the time we were doing this report, they only had 43 lawyers who are representing almost 22 million Malawians. Because out of this, you'll find that I think maybe 90% of Malawians cannot afford to hire a lawyer on their own. They are poor. They don't have resources. So it's very difficult. And just also to highlight that during trial, these women, they faced the magistrates, who are most of them, maybe 90% were lay magistrates. They are not lawyer per se, but they faced them in court. And because of lack of legal representation, and also maybe sometimes lawyers, the magistrates who were handling cases, maybe they were not handling them. They were not responsive to the issue of gender-based violence. Because if a woman is mentioning about gender-based violence, the court or the criminal justice system was supposed to be responsive, question or probe more what happened. Because if they probed more what happened, that could amount to their defense. But since you find that I think the women, they were on their own without anyone, so it was very difficult for them to be tried in a fair manner. So that's why we are saying that I think lack of legal representation necessitated that loss.
Now, I'm just also wondering from your organization what more you can do. Of course, yes, you've come up with this report, but realizing that there's just about 40 lawyers against 22 million Malawians, what other services then do you render? Do you also have like a pool of lawyers, or how can you also help these women that are being punished instead of being defended?
I wish if we had a pool of lawyers, but ours is just an ungovernmental organization. We are not a government organization.
So private sector can also come in and try and do something. I understand that it's a government's responsibility, but I'm just wondering, is it not high time that even the private sector organizations, non-governmental organizations, and also it's all about the women, right? If we see that there are loopholes in the government.
Yeah, we wished if we had that opportunity, but otherwise we don't have. Of course, we have support from other donors, maybe outside the donors, who have been supporting our cause. We have one lawyer at the moment, but we have the capacity of holding about 10 lawyers in the office. But because of finances, we cannot afford. But the lawyer that is attached here, we have a lawyer and also a fellow for the CFJ. So these are the people who are doing the work, but there are just a few to take the cases. They have assisted some of the suspects to get bail, and they are doing a lot when it comes to gender-based violence, but there are just a few. We cannot match the demand which is there. It's a big demand. We receive people almost daily basis or complaining about gender-based violence, and they need a hand in court, but we cannot just do that 100%. Legal aid, they have also tried, they are doing their best, but since they have a small unit of lawyers, it's not easy for them again to reach out to each and every individual, but they are doing it. They are trying. You find that one lawyer at Legal Aid will have about 5,000 cases more, so it's very difficult for them. But we are trying, but it's not as simple as that.
Right, right. Now, Chimwemwe, just to come back to you also, just to find out, in what forms does this manifest itself, especially in the country?
Okay, what I would say is that domestic violence is the most common form of violence against women and girls here in Malawi, with several reasons that appear to be contributing factors. And one of these is the country being a patriarchal society, which contributes highly to gender inequalities and the prevalence of gender-based violence. You see, we have a society that holds a view that men are the most powerful, unlike women. And this view is widely shared in rural parts of the country. You find that women are not given space to hold leadership positions. They cannot freely express themselves during social gatherings. And this trickles down to even politics, the family setup, where a man is considered the head and the center of key decisions. And another factor that I would point to the cultural norms and practices that force girls into marriages. You wouldn't expect a young girl to live freely with a man who she has been forced to get married with without facing violence. And because of her age, this girl becomes a victim of abuse and continues to experience this as years pass by in their marriage. So that's what I can highlight, domestic violence being the major common form of violence against women and girls here in Malawi.
Right. And as you actually report on these, I'm sure you've also spoken to some of the victims, Chimwemwe, as much as even Victor here says they've spoken to about 60 of them. From your own journalistic point of view, what exactly could be the trigger?
I think mostly in the remote areas, these women and girls do not know where to report these cases when they happen. They are suffering in silence without having this knowledge of what is really happening. And you see that when you go in depth of some of these cases, you try to establish that cases have been happening, some dating back to the past 5 years, the past 9 years, women suffering in silence without knowing where to report to. So I say lack of knowledge of what gender-based violence is and absence of critical services in these remote areas, knowing where to go when they experience such cases. So yeah, those two main pointers are what I can say are contributing factors to these rise in gender-based violence cases.
And before I get to Victor Chimwemwe, was there any particular cases in the report that stood out to you as a journalist? I mean, examples that reveal systemic issues?
Yeah, I would make reference to one case that I covered in an area called Nsundwe, where a woman married the past 10 years, but she made a revelation to reporters when we went there during a media tour that she has been experiencing it for the past 5 years. She was married. And after the 5 years, an organization approached her just to sensitize her of her rights. That's when she stood up and reported the cases to the victim support unit, which is under the Malawi Police Service. So yeah, that case, it was really touching to me because you see a woman who has three children, but she had bruises all over her body. She was being physical abused by the spouse. So this is one of the cases that really touched me, and I would still point at it as one critical example of how women are being abused here in Malawi.
Mm-hmm. Now, Victor, how are police trained or maybe not trained to handle GBV cases sensitively and effectively in Malawi? And are there any like existing policies that are on paper and are meant to protect survivors? And where is the breakdown in implementation?
Yeah, I think police, they are trained. We know this, but the police, they are also part of the community. As Simomo indicated, we are coming from patriarchy community. So the police, they are coming from the same. And you find that, I think, when there are 100 cases regarding GBV, you find that sometimes they compromise. When you go around in the Bala Police Services, you find that they have got gender units. They call it victim support unit, whereby the police, I mean the community, report to them regarding gender-based violence. There have been some successes, and at times it's very difficult because you will not find in each and every police station victim support units. But that was a good move by the Malawi Police Service to make sure that I think they should handle the cases of GBV within their communities. But what happens most is that they make, when you are there, it's about mediating or making sure that I think the case should, the people should sit down and resolve. But I think what is a problem now is the area whereby a person has been victimized for several years. That person needs psychosocial support. You find that it's not there. And that person, maybe the perpetrator keeps on doing the same action again and again. But the woman, most of the times in Malawi, they remain to keep silent, because they believe that in marriage, this is what they were taught by their fathers, their mothers, their grandfathers, that their grandmothers, that they call it banja and kupidira. You need to endure in marriage. That's literally the meaning. So whatever happens, I should endure.
And if in this day and age, Victor, you're still talking about this notion that marriage is for life, you must not leave your marriage. Is it like a form of lack of awareness in the country? And I'm also just wondering the role here that the healthcare providers play, or rather maybe fail to play, in supporting survivors.
Yeah, you should know that I think a number of women that are in the communities, most of them, they're illiterate, and they don't understand the law. Maybe the message that you and me know, they don't know, but they keep on staying in the communities. It happens in towns as well, but in towns, the women in town, most of them, they can challenge that one. At least mm-hmm. they will tell a friend. But in the communities, they accept it as a norm, because it happened to their mothers as well. It has been happening to their grandmothers as well. So for them, it's a norm. They keep on taking it, respecting it. That's where it's supposed to be. There have been interventions by civil society to go around, sensitize people. But some of them, they still ignore, because it's a community norm. So it's accepted by the community. They need to accept it. They don't see it like it's a crime. Maybe they see, they realize that this is a crime, the time there have been a death or so. And if you can just see, most of these women, they are coming from the rural areas. Mm-hmm. They were accepting this to happen to them for some time, because to them they think that it is part of my marriage, I just need to endure this. So that's the problem that we are having.
Right, and you didn't touch on the healthcare providers. I just want to know also what role they are really playing in this whole problem.
I think we are having problems when it comes to that. I've mentioned a number of times, even when we are talking of issues of suicides, you find that suicide is a crime in Malawi, but the law does not recognize that. These people, they are not criminals, but these people, mentally, they need to be accepted. They need to be assisted. So in Malawi, the issues of gender-based violence, you rarely see the counselors coming in. I know that some people go to private counselors, or maybe they benefit from the civil society organizations conducting some counseling sessions. Or maybe, for example, in Clare, when we find a woman that is, we know that I think is facing difficulties, we also take her for psychosocial support. But this normally is not happening in the government hospitals. In government hospitals, it's very difficult for a person to get service. So people, most of the time, it's business as usual. So it's very difficult for the women to get service. And again, you find that a hospital without a psychosocial cancer, so this actually is almost zero opportunity for the women to get the services.
Right. And Chimwemwe, just also as we now wrap up our discussion, what protections, if any, exist in Malawian law for women who act in self-defense against an abuser? And are these protections being enforced?
I would say that Malawi has a set of laws and policies aimed at fighting gender-based violence. The current administration has also repeatedly called for action against gender-based violence. But what is failing is implementation of these policies, the ones that I've mentioned, because most perpetrators of gender-based violence are scot-free. With minimal sentences if they have at all gone through the courts. But a majority of these gender-based violence cases end within the community or family setup, with many cases going unreported. And this only paints a gloomy picture that violence is an everyday experience for women and adolescent girls. They grow up with violence, with little opportunity to escape from the perpetrators because there is little that is being done on the ground.
Now, Victor, we're wrapping up our discussion, but just your parting words to also find out if there are any examples from other African countries Malawi can learn from, rather, yes, in reforming its GBV response. Do you foresee that there is enough political will in the country today to make real change on this issue?
Yeah, in Malawi, I think there is political will. I think sometimes we do have good policies, good laws to protect women, but I think what lacks most is the implementation. But we have the goodwill from the government. We have the ministry responsible for the gender. So we have a ministry responsible for that. Just know that I think there's a goodwill. But I think we have a lot of work to do. More especially, I should also speak to our fellow civil society. I think it's high time now that they need to be talking more of the rule of woman. Sometimes we find that I think the NGOs are there, but most of the time they are talking of 50-50 campaigns. These are the campaigns that puts people in power. At the same time, we are not protecting our women who are in the rural areas. There have been attempts by the Women Lawyers Association and other NGOs, but still more, I believe that I think there's much to do. Probably also the only problem that is facing the Malawian civil society is the funding. I remember at a certain period, we had a lot of NGOs talking about women issues, but most of them, they are dying because of the funds. Maybe if we can have funds and that this job can be simplified and we can make a lot of progress.
Victor Mango, Executive Director of the Center for Human Rights, Education, Advice and Assistance, and Chimwemwe Padata, DW's correspondent in Lilongwe. Many thanks for joining us. At Africa Link, we always look across the continent to understand how these stories resonate beyond borders. Gender-based violence is not unique to Malawi. It's a continental crisis. But the way each country responds can offer lessons, warnings, and hope. However, African countries are tackling gender-based violence, GBV, through a combination of legal reforms, regional treaties, cultural shifts, and grassroots engagement. In February 2025, the African Union adopted the Convention on Ending Violence Against Women and Girls. This is a legally binding treaty that obliges member states to prevent, punish, and eradicate all forms of GBV, including digital, psychological, and conflict-related violence. One can only hope that gender-based violence becomes something of the past. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener. You are part of our community. Your voice matters and your feedback helps shape the conversations we bring to you. Let's keep the conversation going and work towards the change we need. You can find all of our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until next time, bye for now.
DW, made for minds.